Well, welcome to the candidate forum for the U.S. Senate Democratic primary. This is the brainchild of University of Louisville students who were trying to come up with a way to get faculty and students more involved in the political process. So they came up with a week-long series of events called Cards Decide 2010. This event is sponsored by the University of Louisville, specifically the Office of Communication and Marketing, as well as the Young Democrats, the College Democrats here on U of L's campus. Now, I just talked about filling out the questions. When you come in the back door, I hope you filled out a question and passed it up here to Hope, who is taking them. She's kind of leafing through them, and we'll be asking some of those questions along with the reporters. Now, there are two Louisville news reporters who will be asking questions tonight along with some of the questions from the audience. Elizabeth, why don't you stand up first and face the audience and show your face there. Elizabeth Donatelli is from Wave 3 News. She began covering political stories at the University of Southern Cal with the election of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. For the last 5 years, she has covered both, and I said, real news and politics. She is currently the capital and political reporter for Wave TV and has served as a guest panelist on KET's Comment on Kentucky. Welcome, Elizabeth. You can applaud. You're allowed. Okay. Andy, stand up. The other reporter who will be asking questions is Andy Alcock from WLKY-TV, Channel 32 here in Louisville. He has more than 20 years' experience as a broadcast news reporter, the last 13 of them at WLKY. And for the last 2 years, he's been awarded the Best Political Reporting Award for television by the Kentucky AP Broadcasters, and he's a nominee again this year. All right, so here's what we're going to do. To begin, each candidate will have two minutes for an opening statement. We randomly pulled their name out of a hat earlier, and that's the way they're sitting. We pulled Dan Margiardo's name out first, so he's going to go first. And they'll go in that order to start with their opening statements, and we'll go in reverse order for the closings. 2 minutes for the opening, 2 minutes for the closing. Each candidate will be given 1 minute to answer each question from either me or from the journalist seated in front of you. 1 minute to answer the question. All of the candidates will answer that question, and we'll mix up the order who goes first. And after that, if one candidate or the other decides that they've been disparaged by one of their opponents, we'll allow 30 seconds for rebuttal. I'll ask them, does anybody want to make any rebuttal? Raise their hand, and I'll give each of them 30 seconds for rebuttal. Only one rebuttal, and it has to be germane to the question that was asked. Now the timers, these two young ladies right down here with the young college Democrats are the two timers. They will be holding up a sign that says either 15 seconds, that's how much time you'll have left, or time. And that's when I'll cut you off. And also, I should tell the members of the audience and the members that are candidates up here that there is a little bit of leeway granted to the moderator here. In other words, if I ask you a question, you don't answer it, I may ask you again and say, could you clarify that answer a little bit? I might press you a little bit. And Andy and Elizabeth may do the same. So we're hoping for some candid discussions here and some frank answers, and if we don't get them on the first round, hopefully we can get them on the second round. All right, so let's begin. Daniel Mongiardo, you have 2 minutes to talk about yourself and whatever else you want to say in your opening statement.
Thank you, and thank you to the Young Democrats here at the University of Louisville for hosting this. I certainly wish that when I was in college that I paid more attention to politics. As I learned through my life, politics has to do with everything that we do, and we either get involved or those who do determine for those who of us that have not. I'm Daniel Mongiardo. I'm from Hazard, Kentucky. I was born and raised and lived in a small apartment over a laundromat. I understand, as I go around this state, the struggles that people are facing today, because I've been there. I've never seen a time as we have today. Throughout my life, I've seen people that are disgruntled with politics and government, but I've never seen the anger with what's going on in our country today, because Washington is broken. It works great for Wall Street. It works fine for big corporations that are shipping our jobs overseas, but for ordinary Kentuckians, for me and you, we're losing our jobs. We're losing our homes. We're losing our health insurance. And it's just completely out of sync. What it's going to take is it's going to take someone that understands the fight to change the culture in Washington. The majority party in Washington today is not Democratic. It's not Republican. It's the lobbyists and the special interest. And what Washington needs today more than anything else is a good, strong dose of Kentucky common sense. And that's what I'm going to take to Washington. I look forward to answering your questions.
Okay, very good. Darlene Price.
Thank you for having me. Our state has been at the bottom 5% for just about everything for way too long. And it's there because our leadership from our state has lacked vision. Time for something new. I am not a professional politician, I'm happy to say. Washington's full of those, and look at where we're at. After I first served my country on active duty in U.S. Army Military Police Corps, I became a special agent on the front lines of the war on drugs. I ran counter-smuggling operations up against some of the most dangerous cutthroat Mexican and Colombian cartels known to mankind. But after serving many years with this agency, I found out that there was something worse than the people I was putting in jail. My managers. I found that out when they let in what would have been the largest seizure on record for any agency, 25 to 40 tons of narcotics. And when my colleagues and I dared to expose this corruption, they came after us big time. We endured the worst threats, retaliation, intimidation that no one in this room should ever have to endure just because we dared speak truth to power. I'm proud to say we did not back down. I became a national security whistleblower. I gave a live testimony in front of the U.S. Senate, in front of Congress, and my written testimony was read before the 9/11 Commission. And along the way, in this battle against government corruption, I worked with other whistleblowers from virtually every agency within the federal government, and we came to a solid conclusion, and that is this. There's a reason our health care is in the toilet, education is second rate in this country, our borders are wide open, and our jobs are leaving. These are symptoms. The disease is crony campaign financing. Our elected officials are voting the interest of who's funding their campaigns and not your interest. This is what I aim to stop. Thank you.
Okay. James Buckmaster.
Hello, and thanks for inviting me here for the Young Democrats. I'm Dr. James Buckmaster. I'm from Henderson, Kentucky. I've been practicing medicine there for 20 years, let's say. I run a clinic for the working poor, for the underprivileged, and for those without insurance, and I've been doing that for 13 years. I don't take any insurance. Until recently, we had to take some because of the financial crisis that occurred, but I would say 75 to 80% of our people don't have insurance, so I deal with them every day. And that's one of the things that's been a mission for me, to try to be out there to help those who need the help the most, those that are suffering. I see them every day, and I know, and I'm sensitive to what they are concerned about. They're mainly afraid of going bankrupt, and they're afraid of not getting adequate health care or not having access to it. And we've been providing that to them at a reasonable cost for the last 13 years. And I've been able to raise my 8 children. I have 3 in college, and we have done fine with that. And it's been a great thing for us. We feel rewarded that we're able to help our community. My first order of job is to create jobs. It must be done by cutting corporate taxes and by protecting our jobs with fair trade practices, by not setting a cap on our wages, but allowing our people to work on a production basis, and encouraging profit sharing, especially to the companies that receive any kind of corporate tax breaks. We need to encourage jobs by saying no to global warming, any initiatives like that, or any cap and trade, because those are job killers and nation killers. And by reducing energy costs by responsible development of our domestic natural resources. At the same time, I will support spending cuts across the board. Domestic spending is out of control, and it's unrealistic to fantasize that we can sustain the current level of spending. There is no way that we can afford this current health care plan. It needs to be scrapped, and it needs to be redone so that we can provide a reasonable plan for those that we can all afford, those who are paying for it, and those that are from the government side.
All right, time's up. Thank you. Mr. Conway, Jack Conway.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you to the Young Democrats. It's great to be back at the University of Louisville, where my beautiful wife, Elizabeth, is an alumna, and it's a pleasure to be here with you tonight. I'm a Kentuckian who has traveled this state more than most, and as I've traveled the state here recently, talking about job creation and what we deserve out of our next United States Senator, I've seen something that disturbs me deeply. folks, the people of our Commonwealth are hurting. Hurting in a way that I never before in my lifetime have seen people hurting. We have an 11% unemployment rate. Families are being ripped apart because the children don't have the jobs that they want in this state. Parents can't afford to educate their kids. Kids can't afford to go to college. We're not setting up the type of future that we deserve. You know, Bobby Kennedy famously said when he was running for president that the youth of our nation are the clearest mirror of our performance. I'm running for the United States Senate because I want to do better by the youth of our nation. I want to create the jobs of tomorrow. And I've been very explicit about how I would go about creating jobs. We have to do it in a number of ways. One, a hometown tax credit so that companies can take tax credits for creating jobs in this economy, far beyond what they've already done in Washington. We need to look at our trade deals from top to bottom because this state has lost 100,000 manufacturing jobs in the last decade. We need a small business lending program that gets capital moving again and moving to the companies that create the jobs in an economy like ours. And I have never been able to separate economic development from education, because the jobs of tomorrow are going to go in a place where the workforce is the most educated. You may ask how I can work on these issues and get something done in Washington. Well, take a look at my record as Attorney General. Since becoming your Attorney General, with a 26% budget cut, I might add, since I've been Attorney General, we've created a cyber crimes unit, a prescription pill task force, Medicaid fraud collections up over 600%, elder abuse prosecutions up over 300%, and we can do it if we work together. I want to be the candidate that appeals to your hopes, not your fears. Thank you for having me tonight.
Maurice Sweeney.
Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing us to be here. My name is Maurice Sweeney. I was raised on a dairy farm 21 miles from here on the Jefferson-Shelby County line. When I tell you I had 100 head of cattle on Shelbyville Road in 1999, I mean it, because my mother called me up and said, Maurice, you got 100 head of cattle out on Shelbyville Road. You need to get home. But, you know, I'm running because I don't think you should have to be a doctor or a lawyer or a baseball player to serve, but you ought to have a record of service. We ask everyday Kentuckians to come out to volunteer to make a difference in our communities. We say it's the volunteers that make a town a community. And yet, something happens when those everyday people that we ask for their vote, when they get ready to take it to another level and want to run. We need to be about empowering other people, empowering our youth, empowering tomorrow, to believe that if Maurice can do this, I can do this too. This is bigger than me. This is about service. I've served on over 35 boards and commissions in this community. I was the youngest person to ever be president of the NAACP. I was the youngest person to ever go through Leadership Louisville. I was the youngest person to ever be Louisville JC's Man of the Year. I was the youngest person to ever be chairman of the board of a Park Duval Community Health Center that saw over 100,000 encounters in Louisville and Spencer County. Those are accomplishments. That's not what we will do. This is what we have done. And in each of those cases, in Park Duval, we were running a $400,000 deficit. When I got off the board, it was $40,000 in the black as chairman. We need to have new leadership and go beyond business as usual. We need to make the Democratic Party relevant again in Kentucky. Right now, we have Republicans in office. They can write Kentucky off. What we need to do is make them look at Kentucky and know that Kentucky is relevant, and I think that I'm the person that can do that, that I can bring Kentucky back into the 21st century and get it the national attention it deserves.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, those are the opening statements. We're going to start with one question from the audience, and then we'll go to the questions from the reporters. This is from Dan Francis, who says, do you support the current health care legislation, and where do you see room for it to grow and improve? Let's start with Darlene Price. Take this one first, and we'll work our way back this way.
Thank you. The current health care legislation that was just signed into law is a beginning, and I do support it. It's not what I would have written myself. I am a proponent for single-payer health care, or at least I could live with a real public option, not a watered-down public option, a real public option. However, I think you have to start somewhere. And when our president stood up against the party of heck no, I think he did about as good as anybody could when you were up against that type of opposition. And I would have voted for this bill because I think it just moved the ball down the field a little ways. And I think that we're on our way. And I think that that's the only way we're going to be able to do it up against, again, the party of no. And the way to fix that is to get more party of yes voted into these offices to go up there and help our president get even better health care for Kentucky and the United States. That's what we need to do, elect more Democrats. Thank you.
Okay, James Buckmaster, you have 1 minute.
Oh, okay. I stand in support of the Democrats in the health care. I think that we have the right idea. I've seen it for 15 years that we have had these poor people coming into the office and they have been ignored by the Republicans. And the Democrats are right to bring this up as an issue. And I support those that stand for health care, all of them. But I support the 36 that said no to this plan, because this plan is a disaster for our economy. It's going to throw more and more taxes and more spending on an economy that is hurt and suffering as it is, and it's going to hurt jobs. And that's what we need. We need jobs so they can pay for their insurance. There is an easier way to do this, and I'll use the same plan that I have. You give them a policy that has a high deductible, attach a health savings account to it, and allow them to not go broke, because that's what the people are afraid of. They come in, they're afraid of going bankrupt from healthcare bills, and this is a system that I use, and it works very well.
Okay, Jack Conway.
Well, this is a very salient question, given that I spent the day beating back Rand Paul and a couple hundred Tea Partiers who wanted me to file a lawsuit that I think is a political stunt. But yes, the answer is yes, I would have voted for the health care reform legislation. I hated the Nebraska Compromise. I'm glad it came out. I would have been proud to stand up and vote for the health care legislation. It's not a perfect bill, but we've got 654,000 people in the state without health insurance. We need to cover more people with pre-existing conditions. Kids need coverage longer. And this was one of those issues here in the last couple of weeks, folks, where Democrats needed to stand up and be Democrats. I was proud to stand up and say I would have voted for the president's health care bill. And my opponent, Daniel Mongiardo, stood up last Monday to the Lexington Herald Leader and said he would have voted against it. He reaffirmed that to WBKO. Not only did he say he would vote against it, he said it was time to stop and start over. Stop and start over, that's where Jim Bunning is, that's where Mitch McConnell is, that's where Rand Paul is, and that's where the whole Tea Party movement is. I'll tell you, that's where Jack Conway is not.
Okay. Maurice. You'll get your chance, Dan, just a second. Maurice Sweeney, please.
You know, I think it's pretty incredible everywhere I go across the state. Everybody that's opposed to health care has health care. And so it is very important that we support this bill as a beginning, not as an end. And I think that that's exactly what has happened. And what I pledge to you is that when I get to Washington, I will be the person who will tell you exactly where the loopholes are, where the inefficiencies are, where we need to tweak these beginnings. And that's the thing, we wait all too often for bills to fall by the wayside or to not perform before we do anything about it. And I propose that within 90 days, we ought to be able to make the changes that we know need to happen. Not that long ago, I went and got a medication. They charged me, they said it was $30, then they said, oops, you've got insurance, it's $4. That's a big difference, and we need health care reform.
Okay, Daniel Mongiardo.
Well, I think it's interesting that Jack Conway has taken the whole week to distort my position on health care reform. I lost a brother in Hazard, Kentucky because of lack of adequate health care. I have spent 25 years on the front lines of health care trying to improve the quality of health care. For the past 10 years in public office, I have been sounding the alarm on the impending collapse in health care. There's no one in this state who has been working harder to true health care reforms. Now, it's interesting that 24 hours, not a month before, not a week before, but 24 hours before the vote on Sunday, Jack Conway was on the Bill Bryant Show, Newsmakers, in Lexington, Kentucky, and Bill Bryant is a seasoned reporter who asked him three different times, does he support this bill? And he says he's not committed to voting for it, three times. And then 24 hours later, he says he would vote for it, and I would vote against it. Now, what I said, and I'll take my extra 30 seconds in rebuttal, what I said was that this is health insurance reform. It is not health care reform. I would vote for it if, and only if, this were a first step, and I had assurances from our president we would continue on with health care reform that would reduce the cost of health care and improve the quality of health care for everyone. And I still stand by that. Thank you.
Okay. I'm assuming somebody else wants 30 seconds rebuttal time. I'm just guessing. Do you want rebuttal time?
Yeah, I would love 30 seconds because I would say that what I said to Bill Bryant was I did not like the Nebraska Compromise, and I've been hopeful all along that health care reform would pass.
Jack, that's not what you said.
Okay.
And we'll get to that. But what you didn't say either is whether you would have voted for the bill. What you would have voted for the bill, and you stand up here today and say you want assurances from the president that there are going to be additional steps. Well, leaders take additional steps. We will improve upon this bill. But I don't think you're going to get assurances from the president when you're out making statements that you don't want him to come here and campaign with you in Kentucky. This president deserves to come to every one of our 50 states. If he comes, I will welcome him. I will tell him where I agree with him, where I disagree with him. We'll tour the state. But you do not get assurances from the president on health care when you're out there saying to international magazines that you don't want him in the state.
30 seconds is up. Remember, you get a two-minute closing, so you'll have an opportunity, a two-minute closing, okay? All right, let's go to the reporter questions. Elizabeth Donatelli, do you have a question for the candidates? Is it on?
Got me now?
Yeah, got
there
it.
We go. Besides healthcare, the other big issue people are talking about, obviously the economy and jobs, lots of people out there hurting. With the national unemployment rate around 10%, Kentucky being even worse than that, I would like two specific ideas that each of you have to kind of lower and reduce the unemployment rate.
Okay, Mr. Sweeney, let's start with you and work our way back towards Mr. Mongiardo.
You know, people fail to realize that Kentucky has more farms and more cattle than any state east of the Mississippi. So one of the things, right now we take our cattle and we send them out to Colorado to be fed out. I would create a agricultural program right here in Kentucky where we can use Kentucky hay and Kentucky feed, and we can feed our cattle right here in Kentucky. Second thing I would do is I would take what we already have, what I call uniquely Kentucky, those jobs that can't be outsourced, and I would take those jobs to the next level, take them from good to great. What do I mean? I mean, for example, we have more Ohio River than any other state. Why don't we take those jobs, those products, those industries along that Ohio River and look how we can redevelop them. Look at how we can deal with coal and how we can do the R&D. We need to let our colleges and universities right here in Kentucky take the lead in R&D as it relates to clean coal. We don't need some other colleges doing it. We can do it right here in Kentucky.
Okay. Jack Conway.
Elizabeth, thanks for the question. I would do two very specific things. One, I've put forward a plan. It's on our website at jackconway.org. I would propose a hometown tax credit. What this is, Elizabeth, is it would allow companies to take 20% of the cost of a new job creation and to take a tax credit against their corporate income tax credit, or if they're an LLC, against their personal income tax. Moody's has evaluated this plan. They say it will create 750,000 jobs across the country, 11,000 jobs right here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. It's something that goes farther than what they've already done in the Congress. It makes sense, and we ought to do it and do it quickly. Secondly, we have to get small business access to capital in this country again. I was with a mom-and-pop hardware store owner on my recent jobs tour, and he told me about how he's been turned down for a loan 22 times in the last 18 months. Small businesses aren't getting loans. They find the Small Business Administration process too cumbersome. Community bankers feel like Wall Street was bailed out, but yet they don't know the rules of lending now, and they're paying the price. So we have to have a small business lending program passed by the United States Senate.
Okay, James Buckmaster.
Yes, I think the two things we need to do in order to create jobs in this state and in the country, the first and foremost thing is the thing that's worked twice. Cut corporate taxes. And you have to not be afraid of hearing the word corporation and profit. Those are good words to get us out of this problem. If you cut the corporate taxes to, say, 15%, then you put money back in the corporations, capital's there, and all of a sudden their prices will come down, they become more competitive, and demand will go up for their products. And bingo, you got your jobs back, and the people are back to work. Now, the nice thing about this is that you don't have to take any money out of your pockets. It comes out of Uncle Sam's pockets to pay for this. And they can pass on their savings through profit sharing with their employees. This has been used twice. The first time in recent history was by John F. Kennedy, and it worked. And it was used again by Reagan, and it worked again. So I don't see why we shouldn't try this instead of investing billions of dollars in a cesspool of money that is just being wasted and is a fermentation area for fraud.
Okay, Darlene Price.
Two things. Number one, how about we stop giving jobs away with programs like the H-1B visa program that allows over 500,000 jobs for foreign corporations to bring in foreigners into the United States. These are skilled jobs like nurses, engineers. These are primo jobs that are being brought in and taken away from American citizens' jobs, and it's driving down wages. This program started when we actually had a shortage. We no longer have a shortage. We have a jobless problem here. So that needs to go. And secondly, green energy jobs. Folks, my biggest fear is our elected officials on Capitol Hill are going to twiddle their thumbs, and then before we know it, every blade on a windmill is going to say made in Mexico, every solar panel is going to say be made in China, and everything green energy jobs that would solve the problem also of global warming, which, oh, by the way, newsflash is real, and we're going to wait around until they take these jobs too. We need to get these manufacturing jobs here.
Okay. Daniel Mongiardo.
The tax cuts and tax credits that are being talked about here and in Washington are great, but they don't help Kentucky any more than they help New York or North Carolina or any other state. We need Kentucky-specific jobs, and there are four areas where I think we can create Kentucky-specific jobs. Number one is energy. We need to decrease our dependence on foreign oil, use what's ours. We can convert coal to liquids, create thousands of jobs in this state, decrease our dependence on foreign oil, increase our national security at the same time, and liquid coal is cleaner than petroleum. It's ours. It's better for the environment. Number two is transportation. We need to be the hub of the next generation of transportation in this country. That's high-speed rail, light rail, and a rapid-access monorail system, with Louisville the hub of that, with the crossroads right here in Kentucky. Number three is healthcare. We need to be the innovation center to develop the next generation of healthcare, and we can use UK, U of L, Northern Kentucky to research that we're doing the right thing. And number four, when it comes to trade agreements, we need a reciprocity clause. If we're going to lower our barriers, then they need to lower theirs. If they're not going to lower their barriers, we need to bring ours up so we can sell our stuff across the world.
Okay. Not sure I heard any need for rebuttal there. Andy Alcock, you got a question? If you can figure out how to turn on the microphone. Don't you have to deal with those every day?
Thank you. Lady and gentlemen, as you all know, Kentucky state government and metro government have to operate under a balanced budget. And we've heard a lot from our governor and our mayor about some very tough decisions in terms of cuts they've had to make here in the last couple of years. Not so with the federal government. According to the latest estimate from the Obama administration, the federal government will have a $1.56 trillion deficit in this current fiscal year, or 10.6 of gross domestic product, the entire output of the American economy, both historic highs and up from 9.9% in 2009. In your view, is this level of deficit spending necessary, sustainable, and manageable, or if not, give me three tough decisions you would make as a U.S. Senator in terms of specific budget cuts or new taxes to pay the national credit card and move towards a balanced budget?
All right.
That's a long question.
I'm going to give you a minute and a half each on this one, all right? So that's kind of a two-part question.
It is.
All right. Did everybody get that one okay? All right. Jack Conway, let's start with you.
Well, Andy, thanks for the question. Let me say, after concerns about jobs, a return to some sort of fiscal sanity is the second or third issue I'm hearing about on the campaign trail. We cannot continue to spend like this. We can't build budgets that have $2.5 trillion in revenues and $3.8 trillion in expenditures. You know, our government has to be our most creditworthy borrower. The problem is, when we're running deficits like this, we are no longer as creditworthy. People ask why it's tough to get tough with China. Well, it's tough to get tough with your banker. And so we have to take a look at this issue. Some of the spending in the short term is necessary in a very, very difficult economy. But here are the things that I would support. One, bulk purchasing power for Medicare to negotiate lower prescription drug prices. That's a $200 billion savings over 10 years. I've come out in favor of ending some of these offshore tax loopholes. We actually have incentives in the tax code that allow for the creation of jobs overseas, and many of these for companies that aren't paying taxes here anyway because they have offshore tax havens in places like the Cayman Islands. 83 of our top 100 companies have offshore tax havens. If we were to change those loopholes, that's $130 $30 billion in savings. We need to ramp up on Medicare fraud, the way that we've done on Medicaid fraud in the Office of the Attorney General. If we're going to ferret out Medicare fraud, we need to have state-by-state investigative agencies looking at this issue. And I also support the Debt Commission to take a look at long-term strategies for bringing down the debt that Senators Conrad and Senators Gregg proposed, and I support the new proposed, or actually recently voted on pay-as-you-go rules.
Okay. James Buckmaster.
Well, I agree that the national deficit is one of the largest issues we'd have to face as we go into the Senate. I would say that in general we need to cut the spending 2% across the board and do that for each year until we get to a balanced budget. We need to cut down the expenditures on that side, and we'll lower the tax revenues on the individual households from $30,000, where it is now, down to about $22,000, when we could increase their money that the consumers have, and that would help the economy. I'd also like to see some improvement in our trade deficit, so that we have fair trade and we can help our economy by making our businesses work better, and that when there's more jobs and more employment, you'll have more tax revenue, and that will help lower the deficit. We need to stop the bailouts. We need to stop bailing these companies out. We need to let the natural forces of corporate society occur. If a company has to go through bankruptcy, then let it happen. Let them renegotiate their contracts and let the workers step forward and say, we want our jobs. We want this company to survive, and we're willing to do it. These are some of the things that we need to do in order to get the deficit down and to improve our income so that we can pay off the debt. And we need to stop asking our senators, what did you bring us? What did you bring home? And start asking them, what did you save us? How did you save us money, and how did you pay off the credit card?
Okay, Darlene Price.
The deficit is not sustainable, but let us recall how we got here. Okay, too often times Republicans out there, both Trey Grayson and Rand Paul, are running around acting like it just happened. George Bush took a big healthy dump all over this country for 8 years. And they're acting like President Obama is just now walking out of the bathroom zipping up his pants. We inherited this. One of the best ways to get rid of it is let's end the two wars. I call them Viet Iraq and Afghanistan. The two wars in the Middle East that we have no business in the first place, and all of the no big contracts that are going with them, millions of dollars that are going over there to rebuild countries that don't want us there, putting troops over there, and our troops are getting killed every day that for no reason. We are not fighting terrorism over there. We're talking millions of dollars. Billions of dollars that could be saved and put back into the United States in our own port security and border security, and bailouts. I would never have allowed these bailouts, too big to fail. If you believe in real corporations, then they should have failed. They should have been broken up. They should have been allowed to fail. And if anything, if I was going to get bailout, I would have given the TARP money to smaller banks who did not engage into what now we're learning is absolute cooking the books.
Okay. Daniel Mongiorno.
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we know how we got here and make sure it doesn't happen again. I support common sense oversight on Wall Street and our finance industries, and I support a fee on the banks that we bailed out and the bonuses of the executives that are getting bonuses because of our bailout until we get every penny of our tax dollars back. Secondly, when I was growing up, my dad always asked three things when it came to any spending. Do you need it? Do you have to have it? Can you do without it? Now, those are the things that everyone around this state and around this country is asking themselves today at the dinner table. Those are Kentucky values, and those are the values when it comes to all spending that I will take to Washington. Thirdly, we cannot get the cost of our budget under control until we control the cost of health care. Between Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, that's 60 cents out of every dollar that goes to Washington. If we don't lower the cost And that's why it's so critical and why this the bill, the health care bill that passed last week, is not the magic solution, as Jack will want you to believe. This is only a first step if we get the cost under control. Fourthly, we need to make sure that we become energy independent, because we're over there a lot of times protecting a source of energy for over here. And if we decrease our dependence on foreign oil, we don't have to spend as much as we do on the military, because that's the next 20%. And the last 20% is everything else that federal government does.
Okay. Maurice Sweeney.
I think the first thing I would do would eliminate Social Security for millionaires. I think that if they fail below
a certain
dollar amount, then
and yours.
Then I would certainly consider rude. I would certainly reinstate their Social Security. Let's say if they fail below $500,000 or $750,000 in personal wealth or something of that nature. But millionaires, they've benefited from being in this great country. They don't need Social Security. That would be a savings. Our presence, our military presence around the world, I think that places like Japan, South Korea, Germany can certainly pick up a larger tab if our military is going to have a presence there, or else we need to bring them home. I think that as we look at Medicare, Medicaid, my mother's 91, my sister and I take care of her. She has a wheelchair that she leases from the government, and they could pay for that wheelchair probably four or five times in the course of getting a new wheelchair. It's ridiculous, the cost or the price that the government is allowed to allow other people who rent and lease wheelchairs and things of that nature to the elderly. So there are some places where we can save money, and we need to be more practical. And that's one of the things you learn on the farm, is how to do more with less.
Okay, Jack, you want 30 seconds rebuttal.
I just want to address the point that Daniel said, that I claim that the health care bill is a magic solution. I never said it's a magic solution. It's not a perfect bill. But at this time in our history, my friends, it is time for Democrats to stand up and be Democrats. This is a good first step. I would improve upon it the first thing I would do is file a bill to have Medicare have bulk purchasing power to negotiate lower rates and save the money that I talked about. But it was time to stand up, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. Daniel, 30 seconds.
And if you take that position and you don't have the assurances of the White House, then you can file all the bills you want and they'll go straight into the trash can. If you have the assurances of the White House, as I said I would ask for, and then 3 days later the President on the Today Show said that this was just a first step, he gave us those assurances. He knows that this is just a first step, so I would have asked for those assurances to make sure that we would continue on to lower the cost and improve the quality of health care. That's a better position to take than just hope that somebody's going to help.
Anybody else want 30 seconds? Darlene, go.
I would just like to ask that the rest of us who are not engaging in the cat fight here would like to have our additional time put at the end for closing. I think that's only fair, that we have this extra time.
Well, then you'll be talking for 5 or 10 minutes. I can't do that. Go ahead. If you want to say something else on one of these topics, just raise your hand, okay?
Okay.
Well, let's just do it that way. All right. I had a couple of questions here from two different people regarding essentially gay rights. Lee Morris asked, do you think the current military policy of don't ask, don't tell should be repealed? And the other person said, it was Nick Clark, asked, why are you the best candidate to advance gay rights? So I'm going to put those together and ask, do you favor repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? And B, would you champion gay rights if you become U.S. Senator? And Mr. Buckmaster, why don't we start with you?
Okay. All right. The first one was about Don't Ask and Don't Tell in the military. I would think that they have gone through great pains to try to be sensitive to the sensibilities of the gay people in the community, and their policy has stood the test of time and should remain. As far as advancing gay rights, I'm pro-marriage. I don't mind gay people having their own relationships. I mean, it's not mine to mind or not, but the marriage is to be between a man and a woman, and that's the way I would stand in support.
Okay. Let's work our way back this way. Jack Conway.
We are, I think, at a critical juncture on this particular issue. Just a couple of months ago, I think, or a month and a half ago, Admiral Mullen courageously came in front of the United States Congress and said it's very difficult to ask someone to deny who they are in order to defend their country. Think about that for a second. And he has put us on an 11-month process where he's going to bring to the United States House and the United States Senate a plan to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I look forward to voting for that plan to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Secondly, here in Louisville, we've adopted a law that basically says when it comes to housing, when it comes to accommodations, when it comes to employment, that we don't discriminate. And you know what? We're a better community for it. And we need in Washington a law that says that we are not going to discriminate in jobs, we're not going to discriminate in accommodations, and we're not going to discriminate in housing based on a person's identity. And that's why I would be the best.
Okay. Mr. Sweeney?
Our military leaders, I think, have spoken on this, and they have said that this is the time that we repeal it, and I'm in favor of that. I think that people who have to work together day after day ought to know what's best. And sometimes we don't need people who don't have a dog in that fight to always be trying to say or what somebody else needs to how to live. So we need to recognize what role we do play. As it relates to gay rights, I'm a firm believer that if you are a citizen of this country, if you pay taxes to this country, then it's nobody else's business. You know, it's funny how the Republicans love to talk about freedom, and you know, we love our freedom more than our First and Second Amendment rights. We love freedom, but freedom is another word for choice. And choice, it's funny how they're ready to take it away, though, if it has to do with something with gay or as it has to do with the right for reproductive life. So I think that we have to allow people to take their freedom and have their freedom, and we need to endorse those freedoms.
Okay, Daniel Manchardo.
The military leaders it looks like they're going to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I would support their decision because they understand the military much better than any of the rest of us. But I would support that move. Secondly, I oppose same-sex marriage. I co-sponsored Senate Bill 245 a few years ago that banned same-sex marriage in this state. The next year, I stood up in opposition to taking away domestic partner benefits. I was the leader that stopped that from taking away domestic partner benefits. I don't believe that we ought to be discriminating when it comes to housing, when it comes to employment, when it comes to anything else, but I just don't believe, and I believe most Kentuckians believe as I do, in same-sex marriage. Now, the question was, would you support or oppose same-sex marriage? And Jack Conway did not answer the question. I think he deserves, you all deserve, the right to hear that answer from Jack Conway himself. Would he have co-sponsored Senate Bill 245? Would he have voted for it?
I'll give him a chance to answer in a second. So would you pass for what, for lack of a better term, is a fairness ordinance? Would you vote for that on a federal level?
Absolutely.
Okay. Darlene Price?
I am a veteran. I come from a family of four generations of veterans. That includes my son, who just recently joined the Navy. And if someone wants to put their life on the line to protect my family, our homeland security, and our safety, the only thing we should be saying to these people are thank you for your service. Secondly, we already have a law in place. It's called the United States Constitution. The United States Constitution guarantees equal rights and equal protection under the law for all citizens. It does not say all citizens except for the gays. That's not what it says. It guarantees equal rights and equal protection for all citizens. I took an oath as a federal agent and in the military to protect and defend and uphold the United States Constitution, and that's what I will do.
So I'm guessing you would vote for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I thought I made that clear, sorry.
Okay. Well, I think you did, but I just wanted to, you know, get a yes or no on that. Anybody want 30 seconds for rebuttal? Jack?
I'm happy to answer Daniel's question. I abhor discrimination in all forms, and I think marriage is a sacred institution between a man and a woman.
Okay. Elizabeth. Oh, I'm sorry, James, go ahead.
Well, I think that the basic premise of having a federal regulation is stepping on states' rights again, and I think we've stomped on that enough. We need, if a state wants to do this, this is something that they need to consider and put it to the general public to vote, and that's the way that they've handled it in several states, and it's been turned down. Marriage is a sacrament, and it is between a man and a woman, and that's the way it should stay.
Okay. Mr. Sweeney, go ahead.
I didn't think you asked that question, but since they answered the question, I would tell you I do believe in civil unions. I don't have a problem with civil unions.
Okay, Darlene, you want to
about marriage? As it relates to marriage, I think that God has an ownership. He grabbed that one first. Separation of church and state. If man wants to do a civil union or do their own thing, I don't have a problem with it. You know, God had it first.
Okay. Darlene, you want to tackle that one?
I agree with what Maurice just said. I believe in a civil union. I was raised that a marriage is between a man and a woman, but I also would not support any law that takes the rights away from anyone, equal rights away. So I think a civil union would absolutely do the job, so to speak.
Okay, do we give everybody 30 seconds, I think? Daniel, I don't know, did I give you rebuttal time? You're good? All right. Andy, or Elizabeth, who? Elizabeth, go ahead.
Whether you love him or you hate him, one of the biggest names in Kentucky is also one of the most well-known and powerful senators, that is Mitch McConnell. First of all, do you know him? Second of all, what is your relationship with him? And thirdly, would you be able to work with him?
Let's see, where did I start last time? I started with you, Mr. Buckmaster, didn't I? Darlene, why don't you go first on this one?
I would try to work with him. Yes, I know him. And let me tell you how I know him. I've worked for many years on Capitol Hill with two of the largest watchdog organizations, GAP, the Government Accountability Project, and the Project on Government Oversight, trying to get whistleblower protection passed for federal government employees and the military because they have none. And he was one of my most adverse people to talk to. I will say this, Jim Bunning was at least polite. I mean, Mitch McConnell was not. And I walked into his office with an appointment with Charles Grassley, who was with me, who was a proponent for the Whistleblower Protection Act, and then at that time, Congressman Bob Barr. So this was a cooperative Republican Democrat bill, and Mitch McConnell was absolutely against it. He was extremely rude, and I would try to still work with him, but we got off on the wrong foot, let's just say.
Okay, let's go the other way. Daniel, why don't you go second? Tackle that one.
Absolutely, I do know him, and I've worked with him every time I've gone to Washington. I've tried to meet with him, especially on healthcare initiatives, because if we're going to change something as complex and important as healthcare, it has to be done in a bipartisan manner. Having said that, my experience has not been in a two-way street. It's been more of a one-way street. Maybe that was because I was a state senator for a time and lieutenant governor. Hopefully when I'm the junior United States senator, he'll have more respect. But my experience, I think, is the experience of most of us here in Kentucky, is that he's been the chief obstructionist in Washington. I think that's a failure on his part. I don't think it's that we shouldn't reach across and continue to try to change that culture, because if you accept that, And you fall into the same trap of what's going on and what's broken about Washington. We have to become more civil than we have been, and I will try my best to work with Mitch McConnell.
Okay, Maurice Sweeney.
Yes, I know Senator McConnell. I've known him for years, back when he was county judge. When he first became senator, I went to Washington to lobby for indigent health care. I think it's incumbent that we put aside partisan politics and try to work with anybody. But let me say this. Senator McConnell's been there for 20 years. And in 20 years, health care for Kentuckians is worse. Education is worse. The fact that we have poverty level has gone up 26% since he's been there. He's been there for 20 years. Mitch has a lot to answer for, and Mitch is about Mitch, and we need to recognize that, and we need to hold each of us accountable. I don't care whether he's from Kentucky or from Ohio, he needs to be held accountable, and he needs to make it work. And if he wants to make it work for all of Kentucky, not parts of Kentucky, I'd be more than happy to work with him.
Okay, Jack Conway.
Well, first of all, let me say that I'm running for Wendell Ford's Senate seat, and I want to return it to the people for whom he fought. And one of the great honors I have is actually Wendell's granddaughter, Betsy, works on our campaign, and she's doing a fantastic job for us. And one of the reasons I'm in politics is because of an experience I had when I was 17 years old with Wendell Ford, and I left that experience saying, that is how you treat people. Now, I do know Senator McConnell. We have a cordial relationship. Elizabeth, we don't have dinner plans anytime soon, let me say that. His favorite place to eat usually is the Karam Deeb over in the Highlands. I see him from time to time when I stop in there and get a sandwich. But I can work in a bipartisan fashion. I think I have a reputation for working in a bipartisan fashion. When I became Attorney General, my top priority was getting a new cyber crimes law passed. And I had to get it through the Kentucky State Senate. And we got it through the Kentucky State Senate unanimously. And I remember one of the comments that I heard after it passed was, wow, I can't remember the last time we passed one of the Attorney General's bills. But I picked up the phone, I asked, I worked in a bipartisan fashion, and I'm the type of public servant that can reach across the aisle. I don't care who gets the credit. I just want to get things done for Kentucky.
Okay, James Buckmaster.
No, I don't know Mitch McConnell. I've never met him before. But I have a lot of similarities with him. I'm a conservative Democrat. I'm socially conservative. I'm politically conservative and economically conservative. I think I can work with him on a bipartisanship relationship with him and many facets of his work. I think that there have been times that I don't understand the things that he's done when he starts off with the TARP. And then he turns around and says that it's a bad thing for us after he already in October said it was a good thing for us. So I think he has been there too long and he needs to come home. So I'll be glad to work with someone else whenever we get up there.
Andy Alcock, got a question?
I do. A couple of you have touched on this a little bit. With the idea of stabilizing the economy at the end of the Bush administration and certainly in the current Obama administration, the federal government has been involved in unprecedented intervention in largely collapsing private businesses, which includes trillions of dollars for the auto industry, the takeover of General Motors, the banking industry, financial services, mortgage, and most recently, probably most interestingly to a lot of our audience, the student loan business. Do you support these initiatives or oppose them, and why?
Daniel Mongiardo, let's start with you.
Well, 6 years ago, when no one thought Jim Bunning could be beaten, and all of the established Democrats in our state sat on their hands, I stood up and took on the failed policies of Jim Bunning and George W. Bush that led to the disaster that we're in right now. I came within 1 point when George Bush won this state by 20 points. The Democrats were probably at their lowest, and the Republicans were at their height of popularity in this country and in this state. No one gave us a chance. But I fought hard. We put together a grassroots organization, and we got more votes than any other Democrat in the history of the state of Kentucky. And the job that I started, that you all helped across this state 6 years ago, we're going to finish in November. Now, these policies failed and ended up where we're at right now, and all of the economists, Democrats and Republicans, together believed that we needed the bailout and we needed the stimulus package, and now the Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, are blaming the Democrats for what Jim Bunning and George Bush and the Republicans put us into, and that's just wrong.
What about the student loan business, Dan?
Sorry?
It's the student loan business, the government taking over the student loan business. Do you support or oppose that?
I am for it because I think it will cut the cost for our students and for our government because there's too much profit in that system.
Okay. Darlene Price?
Answer the last question first. Yes, I would support it. I think it will cut cost, and I think that it's hopefully it's doing the right thing, putting it back into the students, recycling that back into students. More students will have access to college. I think it's a great idea. But also, in reference to the bank bailouts, Let's talk about the bubble in the first place. In May 07, way before, you know, the SHIT hit the fan, the bank bailouts, they had 9 federal regulators testified in front of Congress. These 9 federal regulators were blowing the whistle on Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Bear Stearns, Shearson Lehman. Had someone listened to them, and they actually started blowing the whistle in 03. Instead of firing them, had they had whistleblower protection, maybe the country wouldn't be going bankrupt right now. And when the information they had was that they were cooking the books on Wall Street. And lo and behold, what has come out just recently in the last week? They were cooking the books on Wall Street. It's been all over the news. Gee, no kidding. Had someone listened to whistleblowers instead of firing them and giving them protection, maybe the country wouldn't be going bankrupt in the first place.
So would you have voted for the TARP and the bailouts?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, Mr. Buckmaster?
Okay, that's a rather long question. I'm trying to remember all of it. But looking at the mortgage crisis, I think this has been a long time coming. Not just the last 10 years, but maybe 20 or 30 years. We need to look from a bipartisan responsibility for this thing. We can't just blame Republicans or Democrats for this. We need to honestly look at this situation and try to figure out how it happened so we can diagnose the problem and fix it so it won't happen again. And we need to look at this. I would like to see that as one of my initiatives when we're there, is to try to promote or initiate an investigation into the mortgage crisis that is honest and truthful. I would also like to investigate what happened in September 2008 to our financial system, because somebody hit us, and we haven't ever had the right to know or the privilege of knowing exactly what happened that day when the market crashed, because it was done, and I think they have the evidence of what's happened, and we need to know so we can stop it. Having the student loans taken over by the same people that run Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you have to look at their track record, and I say, no, leave them alone and let the people who know how to run money run it.
Okay, Jack Conway.
As I travel the Commonwealth, what I hear over and over and over is they bailed out Wall Street, and we can't get a loan here on Main Street. I talked to community bankers who said, you know, I didn't take any of the bailout money, yet when I go to church, people are mad at me, and they're mad at the entire banking system. I mean, our community banks feel like the regulators have come down extra hard on them, and they can't make the loans anymore because they really don't know what the rules of the game are. So we need to clear up these small business lending rules. I say no more bailouts. No more bailouts, and especially no more bailouts if we're not going to have strings attached and make certain that the taxpayers get their money paid back. I'm where Dan and where Darlene are, and essentially saying that, look, the Bush administration created this problem. It was a lack of adequate federal oversight, and now suddenly they're blaming the administration for not fixing everything. I think the stimulus was needed. I think not enough has been put into shovel-ready projects, but they should have done a better job of injecting that into infrastructure. And finally, I think having the government come in and run student loans is a good thing, because with the fees and with the private banks, there's a lot of money that's being made off the students with not enough assistance getting to students.
Okay. Maury Sweeney?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to help the students any which way we can and help them to be able to repay their loans. It does our economy no good for them to have a worry about these repayments of these loans over a lifetime. Let me say that all too often we think that the choices have to be either or, when what we really need is a happy combination of both. What we don't talk about as it relates to the bank bailouts, while I would be opposed to the bonuses, guess what? It worked. With the exception of AIG, most of the banks have paid back their money and the interest. Nobody talks about the fact that what President Obama proposed worked. Now, what that means is that we've got to give this administration the time it needs. It took 8 years to get into it, and we expect that it to be fixed with each and every decision that's made, and that is going to fix it right away. It takes some time. It takes some soaking time. So I do think that the loan programs that we're doing is probably in the best interest of the country based on the information they have that we don't have.
Okay, I'm going to use my discretion as moderator to ask a question. As you all read in the newspapers, probably saw on television last night, President Obama has signed an order which opens the door to offshore oil drilling in a portion off the Atlantic coast. For or against? James Buckmaster, why don't we start with you?
How long do you?
A minute.
A minute. Okay. I am for energy independence. It's a part of our security system to get us free from the Middle Eastern stranglehold that we have on us. I think we can go out and safely explore it with the technology we have and get the oil out from the shoreline. We already have times when oil is naturally just expressed from the ocean floor, and oil slicks are out there, and we haven't been drilling. So we have the tar pits in California and other things that show that nature does also cause those things quite naturally. But we have been able to improve our technology to the point where we can do deep sea drilling and other things that we can safely extract the oil, get it out, and help us. Also, we need to increase our use of coal in Kentucky, which would be a great thing for our community and for our employment here. But as far as offshore drilling goes, I'm for it. I think you did the right thing.
Okay, Darlene Price.
When you corner the market on a commodity, you get to set the price. OPEC oil, which stands for Organization of Petroleum Export Countries, have cornered the market on oil. And one of the leading experts in this once defined it as, if you compared what OPEC oil controls and owns compared to us, it's like comparing the Goodyear blimp to a raisin. We're the raisin. Now, if you drill baby drill, not just where he said he wanted to drill, but like five different places and strike oil, we will go from a raisin to a grape. They will still control the commodity of oil. We need to be moving in a different direction entirely, because OPEC oil, these countries, it was founded by Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Venezuela, United Arab Emirates. These countries don't like us. We need to be moving away from that. I probably would have supported this one place if I had had a chance to talk to President Obama, because I think he's a smart man. But we need to be moving away from oil, because we cannot drill baby drill our way out of this. Okay. We need to be moving towards solar, wind, green energy.
Okay, Danny Mangiardo.
We import 70% of our oil from foreign countries. We send our money over there and give it into the hands of people who don't like us, and they turn around and use it against us. We need to do everything in our power, wind and solar, hydro, biomass, all those things. But if you take all of the BTU we have in reserves in oil, natural gas, and coal, 2% is oil, 4% is natural gas, 94% is coal. If we converted all of our coal to liquid fuels, it would be the equivalent of 800 billion barrels, more than the entire Middle East. If you want to change world policy, a leader in Kentucky that's a pro-coal champion can change world politics and world policy by converting our coal to liquid fuels, decrease our dependence on foreign oil, increase our national security, decrease our debt. That's the type of United States Senator that we need in this state, and it will create jobs at the same time.
So do you support the offshore drilling?
Yes, sir. Okay. Everything that's ours.
Okay. Maury Sweeney?
Yeah, I would support it. I think it gets back to what I just said about either or. We need a combination. We don't need to be set in just one area. I would beg to differ with Dan. I don't think you can be opposed to cap and trade and say that you're prepared to be the leader in coal, clean coal technology. You cannot stick your head in the sand and act as if cap and trade CO2 emissions aren't going to take place. So if it's going to take place, either you dictate change or change will be dictated to you. So what that means to me is that we need to be able to be proactive and not reactive. And proactive means that we make sure that our colleges and universities are getting the R&D dollars to make sure that clean coal has the ability to do just what he said, and that is to take the place of oil.
So you're for or against the opening up offshore sites?
I think there's a happy combination there. I'd be in favor of it. Democrats have a history of caring for the only earth we have.
Okay. Jack Conway, hold on.
I would be for it, Mark. I haven't had much a chance to study it yet, but based on what I know of the administration, I think they'll do it in a responsible way. So I would support it. I think we need a comprehensive energy strategy. I've had a lot of people who are close to my campaign educating me a great deal about what we can do with retrofitting buildings to reduce our carbon footprint, to make certain that we have urban centers that use less energy, and really, really make a difference as we try to move into a new energy and a clean tech economy. We need to be using renewables, wind and solar and biomass, and all of the energy sources that we have available. And we also need to invest in clean coal technologies. You know, 15 years ago, there's a lot of Western Kentucky coal that wasn't being burned from places like my father's home county of Union County, Kentucky. The reason was that it was high in sulfur. Well, technology has taken us to a place where we can scrub a lot of that out. Who knows where technology can take us in the next 10 to 15 years.
Okay, Daniel, do you want 30 seconds?
Yeah, I do. As far as cap and trade, I'm opposed to it because it puts a tax on coal. We can't tolerate that in this state. We produce 30% of our nation's steel, 40% of our nation's aluminum, and anything that would tax those industries will move those jobs not to Indiana but to China. We can burn coal with zero emissions within 5 years with innovation and research, and we have one of the best research facilities at the University of Kentucky Center for Applied Energy Research, and coal to liquids will sequester the CO2 and it can be used for enhanced oil recovery, which will provide us more energy independence as well. So it's much better for the environment than using somebody else's oil.
Anybody else want 30 seconds? James?
I think this discussion about cap and trade basically hinges on the fantasy of global warming. And we need to understand that that is based on bad science. The head meteorologist from MIT has said so back in June of last year. And we need to quit playing along with this fantasy and begin to just look at getting our economy back, working and get our jobs back without trying to accommodate some sort of fairy tale.
Hey, Darlene Price.
When 11 generals from the Pentagon who are anything but left-leaning write a report that's entitled Global Warming, a Threat to National Security, I think the cat's out of the bag. When you have many, many hundreds of award-winning scientists, Nobel Prize winners saying, folks, we got a problem. I think we have a problem. I'm against the cap and trade bill, but for different reasons than they are. You would have to re-entitle it the cap and fraud bill. We need to be moving in that direction, but the way this bill was written, it has too many loopholes for people to game this system.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else want 30 seconds? All right. Two questions, and then we're going to get into closing statements. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Right, you guys answered most of my questions. I'm going through here. I was asking for some feedback from people on what they wanted to know, and I got several responses on my Facebook page to people I was talking about in the Capitol, some of my friends on the phone. And the question was regarding Kentucky's economy specifically. It's based a lot on agriculture. You know, what is Kentucky known for? It's known for its horses, it's known for tobacco, it's known for bourbon. So what ideas do you have to try to push Kentucky's economy into the 21st century, and how can you do that at the level if in the Senate seat?
Where did I start last time? Did I start with you, Dan? I forgot where I started last time. Let's start with you, Jack, in the middle.
I go back to the point I made earlier in my opening statement, Elizabeth, and that is, as someone who has served in a Democratic governor's administration, as someone who's the Attorney General, someone who's passionate about education, I have never been able to separate the issue of education from economic development. So the best thing that we can do to have the jobs of tomorrow, whether they be battery plants that are cells for the cars of tomorrow, whether it's innovation in the next generation of seeds that allow us to keep certain pesticides off of the crops, any type of bioengineering that we're luring right here to Louisville, I keep coming back to the fact that we have to invest in our kids in order to have the jobs of tomorrow. And that means, yes, following through on elementary and secondary education reforms, higher education reforms, also investing in early childhood education. We know that the kid who can't read at 7 is a likely dropout at 16. And until we get our educational attainment up to compete with Indiana and Tennessee and Virginia and North Carolina, we're not going to compete as well as we can. So I didn't give you an industry-specific answer, but I think education and economic development are that interlinked.
Okay, Mr. Buckmaster.
Okay. As I recall, the question was about the economy in Kentucky and how we could help that. I was a young physician back in the early 90s, and I remember when the BTU tax was being proposed, and I was from Western Kentucky, and I know exactly what happened to those coal miners. We lost thousands of jobs, good coal mining jobs, because of this BTU tax, and they have not recovered until recently. And now if we look at this other thing with other regulations piled on it, like cap and trade, we're going to lose them again when we just now got it back up on our feet. We're talking about jobs that made $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for people who only have a high school education. You can't flip enough burgers to make that kind of money, okay, when you're out of your job. I've been down with those coal miners. I've been to the face, and I know what it's like. And those people are brave, and they deserve our support, and their companies need to be supported. We need to cut corporate taxes, like I said, so we can help the Toyotas and the Honda plants and the Lexmarks and the Dana corporations and the PBS chemical plants. We need to help them to get profitable again so we can get our jobs and get our economy back. We need trade to be fair, and we need it to be enforced. We need to re-evaluate some of the trade agreements we've done.
Okay.
And look at these regulations.
Okay. Thank you. Darlene Price.
We need to take programs like the North American Free Trade Agreement and make it the North American Fair Trade Agreement. 30 years ago, we led the world in exports. Now we lead the world in importing because we don't make anything here anymore. We need someone who's going to stand up and vote the interest of your interest. Who benefits from these trade agreements? Think about it. Follow the money. As an investigator of many years, follow the money. Who benefits from this? Multinational corporations. Who's one of the biggest contributors to campaigns on Capitol Hill? Multinational corporations. We have turned our government from a system of government to quid pro quo. If we don't stop crony campaign financing, the jobs aren't going to get fixed. The energy's none of this is going to get fixed. How many people here, raise your hand if you've heard more than once, nothing gets fixed on Capitol Hill. Raise your hand if you've heard that. This is why. And nothing is going to get fixed, no matter what these people say up here, until we fix the legal bribery of lobbying on Capitol Hill.
Okay. Daniel Montardo.
I have talked to a lot of farmers around this state, and the older farmers especially are very concerned because their children can't stay on the farm for one simple reason. They have to go find a job to get themselves health care. The skyrocketing cost of health care is destroying the family farm, especially the small farm. So we've got to get the cost of health care, once again, under control. Number two is we need to look at biomass, miscanthus and the switchgrasses, because those grasses are actually CO2 negative compared to other forms of production of electricity. That will give our farming families a new cash crop. Also is biotechnology. The University of Louisville works with Kentucky Bioprocessing. They genetically engineer a tobacco plant to produce a protein that is a pharmaceutical drug. Here in Kentucky, those will create thousands of jobs right here. It will help our farming communities. It's high tech, and it will benefit not only our state, but our country as well.
Okay, Maury Sweeney.
Yeah, there's several things. I think you asked about agriculture. It's the only real farmer up here that actually grown at least 100,000 pounds of tobacco one year. As I said earlier, we need to grow our own cows. We have more farms and we have more cattle than any other state east of Mississippi. The reason that farmers aren't being able to make it is not because of health care, it's because you can't afford it. If you can afford the land, you can't afford the equipment. If you can afford the equipment, you can't afford the land. That gets back to what we talk about, our banks and our community banks, and being able, you know, one of the things that would be helpful is if the PNCs and the Fifth Third banks, if you're not going to give the money and the loans to the community banks, that these big banks need to have loan authority in the state in which they reside. We don't need to have to ask somebody in Cincinnati or somebody in Pittsburgh for loan authority. We need, if you're going to be in Kentucky, if you're going to serve Kentucky, then that decision need to be made in Kentucky, and you'll hear them talk about this issue next week because they take my stuff.
All right, Andy Alcock, last question.
Okay, two-part question. Ms. Price touched on this a little bit.
Can they answer in a minute?
Yeah, okay. I hope so. Okay. Right. Do you support the president's surge of troops in Afghanistan? Does the United States have a clearly defined mission there, and should there be a timeline for success or failure? Secondly, is the withdrawal from Iraq moving to your satisfaction, and should the U.S. maintain some military presence there in the coming years?
Okay, I think we do that in a minute, I hope. Darlene, let's start with you.
No. No. I campaigned my butt off for President Obama. And one of the reasons I did that is I really felt that he was going to get our troops out of there, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was very disappointed in the surge of troops in Afghanistan. I think that of all the things he's done, that's been the most disappointing to me, and I'm still a great supporter of him, but it was a mistake. And everybody's entitled to mistakes, but this mistake kills people. I could talk on this for 3 hours, all the reasons why we have no business in Afghanistan or Iraq, and all the reasons why we need to bring these troops home. But the biggest reason is our kids are over there dying in the sand. Russia couldn't do it with 80,000 troops. What makes us think that we can do it with the little bit of troops that we have? And we have traded the manhunt for Osama bin Laden for these two wars, and we don't have bin Laden. That speaks a lot about where we're at and why we shouldn't be over there. We're using the wrong tools for the job.
Okay. Mr. Buckmaster.
Okay. As I understand the reasoning, I looked this up recently to read why they wanted the troops. And as I understand, the reason behind it was a matter of security for our troops that were there. The indigent people were becoming more and more agitated and helping out the Taliban because there were more and more of them being hurt and injured by the airstrikes. So the military experts said, well, we need to get more ground troops on the ground so we can be more specific about how we target the enemy and have less casualties from the civilians. So, I think that was a good decision to make, and it should help stabilize our Afghanistan and help to improve our chances of setting up a stable government there and improve our chances of getting out of there when we clear out al-Qaeda. As far as setting up times, it reminds me of one of my basketball coaches used to tell me, not that I went very far in that, but because I kept doing this, but he said, you're telegraphing your pass. And every time I'd pass the ball, someone would steal it because they could see right where I was going. So if we're going to put a timeline up and start blabbing it all over the country, then the enemy is just going to sit there and wait until the time's up, now.
Sure enough for the timelines in Iraq, no. I take it.
Yes.
Jack Conway, Afghanistan and Iraq.
Okay. Andy, the president can do what he wants with the surge in Afghanistan, obviously, but I'm one of those Democrats that expressed strong reservations about his actions in Afghanistan. I did so for a number of reasons. One, I've been in a lot of these panels. I was in one downtown Louisville last fall where the Republicans were pounding the table screaming, we've got to win the war, win the war, win the war. Well, the definition of success in Afghanistan means leaving a reasonably stable country, more stable than we found it, that doesn't harbor terrorists. That's the best we can hope for. And I don't think that we can achieve that. I don't think that we can achieve that until we're very upfront about how Pakistan plays a role in that process. Because we're never going to achieve the regional stability until we know upfront, what is Pakistan doing? How are they combating terrorists? They harbor a deadly mix of terrorists and al-Qaeda and actually nuclear weapons over there. So we need Pakistan to really step to the table, and that's the reason I expressed reservations. The drawdown in Iraq is proceeding, it seems, on schedule. We may have to have some presence into the future. I hope it's as small as possible because that's been one very difficult experiment for a lot of us to watch as it pertains to our young men and women who I support.
Okay, Maurice Sweeney.
I think that it's certainly time. I think we're pretty much on schedule as it relates to Iraq, as best I can tell. I think that Afghanistan, the issue is Pakistan, and that's why we're there, and that's what we need to be taking into consideration. I would caution people, though, you know, the worst thing you can do is ask candidates things that they don't have the information that the White House has. They don't have the information that others have that you would hope are making these decisions in our best interest. And I get so sick and tired of candidates acting like they know everything, you know, all the answers to questions that they don't have the security or the know-how or the ability to really know and give you a good answer. But based on what I can see, I think Pakistan is the issue.
Okay, how about Iraq?
I think that the schedule is good. We need to be leading.
Right. What about the presence there,
long-term
presence?
In Iraq? I would be opposed to that. As we're policing again, and as I said earlier, we don't need to keep policing the world at our cost unless, you know, if you move people from South Korea, from Germany, from Japan, and at the same cost, no new cost, then it would be something I would consider, but no new cost.
Okay. Daniel Mongiardo.
The reason we have to maintain a presence there is because we have such a dependence on energy from that area of Saudi and the surrounding countries. You know, we were misled into Iraq. Now, we're there. Luckily, that country has had elections a few weeks ago, and it looks like it's being stabilized. And we're on track to withdraw by 2011 or so. And if when we do, we'll save $144 billion a year, so that's going to help our budget as well. Now, Afghanistan, as everyone said, it's not just Afghanistan, it's Afghanistan and Pakistan. So both countries need to have stable governments in order for the terrorists not to resume activities in Afghanistan, and I think that's about as good as we can achieve. But long range, we have to understand that the more we can do here in this country, including everything we can do, including efficiencies, we need to decrease our dependence on foreign oil so we can dictate and use our own energy sources for our own economy here in this country. I think it's imperative.
Get an answer? Okay. All right, there you go. That's the question and answer portion. And now we're going to move into the closing statements. 2 minutes. We'll start with Mr. Sweeney, and if you don't use your 2 minutes, God bless you.
Well, I want to thank you all for allowing me to be here. I suggest that you go to my website, www.ibelieve2010. I'd like to say to the students here, you're the most important resource we have. And it's not about the fact that, I know you all get sick and tired of hearing about us boomers, and the boomers did this and the boomers did that. Well, this is your opportunity to have your own generation, and I suggest you call it the generation of truth, because the one thing that's missing in Washington more than anything else is people who will look you in the eye and tell you the truth, regardless of the consequences to themselves. And we need somebody, and I will be that person that will tell you the truth. And I think that's extremely important. I think that one of the good things that came out of healthcare was the fact that we need to be looking at how you want us to redefine the role of government. We all want a better government, but what does that look like? What does that need to look like? What will that look like? And those are decisions that we need to have more discussions about. What is the role? Because all too often, government has become antiquated, and we're still working within the rules and the regulations of 1776. So we need to kind of think about that. We need to look at how we can better help our ex-offenders get their voting rights. And we need to look at how do we eliminate the fear. We've got too much hypocrisy out here. And so that when these folks get ready to talk, and when you have these various Tea Party people, we need somebody out there not to succumb to fear, but to tell the truth. And when they tell us, you know, the only thing worse than a lie is a half truth, because it looks like the truth, it smells like the truth, it sounds like the truth. And we need people, you need your elected officials willing to tell you the truth. And I believe that we need to have new people in Washington that can bring the attention that Kentucky deserves and bring it back home. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jack Conway.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Andy. Thanks to the Young Democrats and to the University of Louisville. And thank you to this community. It's a wonderful place to live. It's a wonderful place to make a home and to raise a child. And I want to thank this community for all it's done for me. It's given me opportunities. When I ran for Congress, many of you walked in the streets with me. You've given me outstanding vote totals when I ran for Attorney General. And I am humbled by the support that I get in this community. My story is a Kentucky story. My father grew up on a farm in western Kentucky. He put himself through law school at night here at U of L in the night program, while he taught school and coached football during the day at Fairdale High School. My mom was the daughter of a union blacksmith who worked at the L&N Railroad, not far from here, 47 years, and on that side of our family, I'm the first to go to college. And the reason I'm in public service is not because I like seeing my yard name on a yard sign or what people may say about me over these next 8 months. I'm in it because they taught me the attributes of hard work, and that when you're given something, you need to give back. And when I was elected Attorney General, we gave back. We went to work every day, created a cyber crimes unit, have tackled prescription drug issues, and we've treated a public office like it's a public trust. We haven't given speeches and failed to show up. We have gone to work. And I want to run that type of campaign for the United States Senate. I want to appeal to your hopes, not your fears. For too long, there have been campaigns that have divided this state, Louisville against the rest of the state, urban versus rural, east versus west. My friends, we're all in this together. Whether it's a coal miner in Dan's hometown of Hazard, a farmer in my father's hometown of Morganfield, or a displaced Ford worker right here in Louisville. We're all in this together. In Jefferson County, I'm running for the United States Senate, and I hope you'll run with me. God bless you, and thank you for having me.
All right. James Buckmaster.
Okay. Just kind of wrap up things a little bit. Basically, I want to know, what you want. What do you want in your community, and what do you want from your leaders? I know what I want. I want to live within our means, and I want to be protected from our enemies, both those that are within and those that are without. I want to get to the bottom of the mortgage crisis. I want us to be energy independent, which will help get us out of the mortgage crisis. I want to know what's happened to our economy and what happened back in 2008. Now, I know what we want, basically, as a people across the state and those that I've spoken to throughout the state. They want their freedom. They want their freedom from a government that is growing by leaps and bounds, and they want the oppression, this oppressive type of hand on regulations, on their jobs, and on the economy to stop. We also want freedom from burdensome taxes, and we want our liberty to make a decent living. We want our liberty to choose our own health care. We want our liberty to choose our own pathway. And when I get to Washington, I will promote a real jobs bill and do everything I can to get us back to work. I will try to secure our borders, and I will promote a balanced budget to help to get America back to business again. Thank you.
All right. Darlene Price.
Three bills would forever change the face of politics on Capitol Hill forever. Number one, a real conflict of interest bill that would absolutely put a dent, or more than put a dent, than the legal bribery of lobbying. We can no longer go after the money because the Supreme Court has said we can't go after the money. But what you can do is do a nuanced bill that says that if you take money from XYZ Bank, you're not sitting on the House Banking Committee, and XYZ Bank is not going to hire your family for at least 10 years. And more nuanced than that, a lot more to it, but a conflict of interest bill. Number two, term limits. I have vowed that I will only run for re-election one time. I'm on the record saying that. I believe in term limits, as does Maurice Sweeney. And I think that's a big part of the problem. They go up there, they lose touch, and they join the country club, and they will do anything to stay up there. That's a big problem. And number three, real whistleblower protection. Who works around all these people on Capitol Hill? Federal government employees. If they had real whistleblower protection to speak truth to power, you would have real transparency on Capitol Hill. Now, I ask you to consider the following in picking the candidate. We're in three wars right now, two in the Middle East and the forgotten war, the war on drugs. I have real military counterterrorism training and experience and counter-narcotics smuggling training and experience, and I'm the only candidate who can say that. Number two, this is a federal government position, not a state position, dealing with federal law and federal bureaucracies. I have worked with virtually every federal agency on Capitol Hill, either as a whistleblower or on multi-agency task forces. And I'm the only candidate in this race who can say that. Number three, I put my life on the line for my country as a whistleblower and also as a federal agent. And I'm the only candidate on this race who can say that. And I have leadership experience where I've had people's lives in my hands that had I made the wrong decision, they and I would have been sitting on a cold slab with a toe tag. So, when you get a chance this May 18th, remember, Price is Right for U.S. Senate. Thank you.
Daniel Mongiardo.
I know it's the end of the program, but I'd like to introduce you to my wife, Allison. Allison, would you stand up? We have a 3.5-month-old daughter, and I want her to grow up in a Kentucky that I believe that we all think is the best state. We have the best people, we have the best state, but we lag behind in so many categories. I was born and raised in Eastern Kentucky. I'm the only major candidate in this race on either side that was born into a working class family. I grew up in a small apartment over a laundromat. I understand what it takes to struggle and to sacrifice and what people are going through today. But I see so much more for our state. I understand the hard work that it's going to take. If we use what's ours, we can lead in so many different areas. We can lead our country to energy independence by using our agriculture lands, by using our natural gas, by using our coal and coal to liquids, and our universities to develop the next generation of health care. Not only can we expand health care coverage to more people, but we can improve the quality of health care. Too many people can't afford it today, and too many people die because of a lack of a modernized healthcare delivery system. Kentucky can fix that problem and fix the problem for the rest of the nation. We can become the crossroads of the modern next generation of transportation right here in the heart of our country. We can do all these things and have a brighter future for my child, for our future children, and for the future of Kentucky. I'm running for the United States Senate because I believe that's the Kentucky we all deserve, and I ask for your vote. Thank you, and God bless you.